Welcome to this new incarnation of the Arizona Highways podcast. We are excited to have you listening with Arizona Highways editor Robert Steve. I'm Steve Goldstein. In every edition of the podcast, we're going to give you a little different approach than you'll find in the publication. That means sometimes we'll whet your appetite and encourage you to learn more by reading the magazine, but we'll also try to shine additional light on a story or on someone featured in a story. This episode of the podcast ventures into the January 2024 issue of Arizona Highways, which is devoted to the Grand Canyon. In a few minutes, our focus will turn to a piece by Kathy Montgomery called To the Bat Cave, and we'll learn about one particular cave in the Grand Canyon that contains a distinctive group of residents. But before that, let's welcome formally the editor of Arizona Highways Magazine, Robert Steve. Robert, thanks for the opportunity to do this. I'm very excited.
Well, thank you for saying yes. I feel like I proposed and you said yes. So I've been doing a happy dance ever since. It's such an honor to have you attached to this podcast. Your reputation is as good as it gets, and no doubt many of our listeners out there will be very familiar with that voice of yours.
So I think it's going to be fun. I think we're going to learn a lot and have fun. Now, maybe it's because of my own media experience and longtime love of magazines, but I have always enjoyed your editor's letter. I think I've told you that. I love your writing. I love the historical perspective that you bring. So in this issue in particular, you wrote about threats to the canyon and serenity, if that's the right word. Mm-hmm. You start back with Teddy Roosevelt, but then you move ahead to the early 60s. I wonder if you can refresh our memory. What was going on then?
Yeah, well, you know, it's actually surprising to think that it was only happening in the 60s, because it sounds like something that might have been happening decades before that. But, you know, with mining leases and things, different companies had different stakes in the ground, so to speak. And a uranium mining company had a mine just, yeah, you know, just west of El Tovar there on the south rim of the canyon. And it came to our attention at the magazine. This was obviously before my time, but we had gotten a letter to the editor from a reader who had seen something in Parade magazine. And some of our listeners might remember Parade. It was a mainstay in the Sunday paper pretty much everywhere you lived in America. And they had done a story about this company was going to build this grand hotel that was going to not just be on the rim of the canyon, but it was actually going to spill over the side of the canyon. The way I described it in my column was like frosting spilling over the side of a piece of pound cake. And it looked like something out of the Jetsons. As it turned out, it was never built. But there was a possibility that could have been there because they did have rights to that land.
A couple of things I find interesting. One is that a couple of letters you cite, and this shows Arizona Highway still has a great reach, but it shows just how massive the reach was back in those days. Mm-hmm. The letters that you referred to, one's from Fort Lauderdale, is another one from back east somewhere?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we would get letters from literally all over the world, and we still have a good reach. But, you know, when you go back and look in some of those old issues, and that's probably what sparked this column idea, to be honest with you. You know, I'm looking in my column to maybe add some other information, you know, beyond the stories and not just talk about what's coming up in the issue. And I may have stumbled upon that letter and said, oh, right, that happened. And
also in your note, you talk about how ultimately it almost sounds like the company was looking for an out to make it sound like it was their decision to not ultimately happen. Is that how you sort of read it?
Well, what happened? Yep, right. So they were looking for an extension on their lease. And they started playing hardball. And so, you know, and so after we published the letter from the one reader talking about seeing it in Parade magazine and, oh my God, I can't believe this is going to happen. And we got over 100 letters like that. We only published a few, but it became a big story nationally, in part because of the Parade piece. But the CEO of the company then wrote us this very long, it was like a child making excuses for eating all the cookies in the cookie jar, right? And it was, you know, some PR person may have helped write it, but it was ultimately, it came across as an ultimatum. And it said, you know, we've got stockholders, and if the United States government will not extend our lease for another 35 years, we have to think about our stockholders, and we're going to build this great hotel. And ultimately, it was debated in Congress, and it became a bigger story than I think they anticipated. And as it turned out, the government did extend their lease. They had already had a small little motel there with some cabins. and a gift shop, which you might be surprised to know they sold samples of uranium you could buy in the gift shop back in the, and this was the early.
So there were more superheroes created then at that point?
So something like that. And so, you know, as the story ended, they had to tear down their hotel and their gift shop by a certain date. And they did. And then a couple of years later, the mine fizzled out because they lost government subsidies and it became a money pit, no pun intended. And it shut down. Interestingly enough, and no doubt some of our listeners will remember hiking along the Rim Trail and seeing the remnants of that mine, because the sort of the steel girders and things stuck around for another four decades. You walk through there now and you have no sign of it. So it's back to the way it was.
So as I mentioned, the January 2024 issue is devoted to the Grand Canyon. Let me throw a fastball down the middle to you. Why is the Grand Canyon such a wonderful sort of lockstep with what Arizona Highways does?
You know, our mission is to promote travel and get people off of the couch. And, you know, if people are coming from all over the world to see this place, it stands to reason that people right here in Arizona might want to go see it too. Although it is interesting, and I know you and I have talked about this in the past, it is amazing how many natives you will meet or people that have lived here for decades that haven't made that trek up to the canyon. And my theory has always been that it's maybe always going to be there in their mind. You know, it's not going to change. It's not going anywhere. But that's not always the case. I mean, again, the story of that motel could have changed things dramatically up at the canyon. So for us, it's a no-brainer. I know you're a Sandy Koufax fan, and it's like if you've got Sandy Koufax in your rotation, you're going to put him out there every 4 days or whatever is the appropriate number of days. I mean, you're not going to let him sit and rest. So with the Grand Canyon, it's and to this point, knock on wood, we haven't run out of stories.
That is Robert Steve. He's the editor of Arizona Highways Magazine. I'm Steve Goldstein. Stay tuned because right after this, we're heading to the Batcave. You're listening to the Arizona Highways Podcast. I'm Steve Goldstein with the editor of Arizona Highways Magazine, Robert Steve. As we mentioned, the January 2024 issue of the publication is devoted to the Grand Canyon, and one of the more fascinating stories in this particular issue is about bats that live in caves in the canyon, or at least have lived in caves at the canyon. The name of the story is To the Bat Cave, and it's by Kathy Montgomery. And joining us now to talk about his role in the story is Jason Belensky. He's the director of the Grand Canyon Cave Research Project. Jason, welcome to the Arizona Highways Podcast. This is going back a long way. The way Kathy Montgomery starts her piece in the magazine, 2007. If you can remember that far back, give us a quick idea of what you were doing there in the first place. 17 years ago, what took you to the canyon for this specific purpose?
I'd done some caving in the Grand Canyon before 2007, and I'd seen some of the caves in the canyon, and I really liked them. They're really interesting caves. They're really pretty. And, you know, being the Grand Canyon, I thought there was potential for more caves. So I was out there looking for the next cave.
Based on the piece, sounds like you were looking for some elusive larger caves. Difference between a small-ish cave and the kind of cave you were looking for.
Right. So, you know, up until that time, most of the caves in the canyon were sort of walking size passage caves. You could walk through them comfortably without having to crawl much, but most of them weren't like sort of gigantic in size. However, there was one cave that had a section of it that was big, that was more like 30 to 50 feet in diameter passage. And I saw that cave in the Grand Canyon. And I thought to myself, you know, if there's one like this, you know, there could be more. And so, you know, that was sort of my ultimate goal, was to try to find something that had that size, you know, passage diameter somewhere else, but, you know, went for more than a few hundred feet like that. I was actually looking for something that might, you know, be something like a mile long or so.
And as it turned out, this particular cave was something like 40 miles long. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And not finished yet. You know, 40 miles is, you know, 42 miles is what we've currently mapped it to. But we've got a lot of passages we haven't traveled down yet. So we know that there's still more there.
When I read that in the piece that Kathy wrote, I actually asked our copy editor if that was an error. I mean, 40 miles just to me seems so far. I mean, if I got in my car and drove 40 miles, I would be able to listen to Stairway to Heaven about seven or eight times. I mean, is that unusually long?
The United States in general does tend to have some sort of the longest caves in the world, but 40 miles, I think in the, it's maybe like the 80th longest cave in the world, somewhere in there. And it is true. This is a team effort. So I've never seen all that passage, right? It's a large group of us that have been working on mapping this, and only, there's probably been only a few people in a lot of those passages. So, and the other thing to remember is that this isn't a single passage that goes, 40 miles. This is a maze passage with a bunch of interconnected passages, right? So, if you look at it from like the surface, if you look at it from a top down view, it only encompasses like a little over a square mile of surface area. But there's just a lot of mazy passage in there that builds that all together to make that length.
And the story itself is called To the Batcave. So we have to, I think we've already given away the lead here. So when you first saw, I mean, yes, you're going in these caves, you're an explorer, you're trying to find out some very interesting, important scientific things. But when you saw all these bats, can I just get the human reaction? Did you have to change your pants afterwards? Were you doing okay?
There's a lot of thoughts going through our heads. One thing to remember is we didn't notice the quantity of bats immediately, right? So we're in this big, huge passage, and occasionally we'd see a dead bat, and we'd notice that it was well preserved. And then we started to notice that there were sort of different ages, in the cave. And one thought that's going through our mind, right, is that these things are mammals, and we're also mammals. So whatever they might have breathed something that caused them to die, and we could be breathing the same thing, or whatever's in this cave that caused them to die could also, have harmful effects for us. And then as we started to, like I said, this big passage, we're just sort of walking down the middle of it. But as we started to, sort of explore the sides of it, we're noticing there's just a lot of these, right? Just a huge amount of these dead preserved bats inside this cave.
What was your next step after that?
Well, we were working with the Park Service. So the first thing we do, right, we're there and we're going to document these, right? So we're going through this cave, we're creating a map, and on that map, we're trying to inventory all the resources this cave has, including the bats, right? But it starts to become obvious, the bats are sort of one of the most, interesting and unique features within this cave. So, right away, we started to let the park know what was going on. At the time, they had a bat biologist that was working at the park that was doing inventories, but they were more doing inventories of the living bats that were, not looking at something that was old, looking at something that was still alive. But there was someone there that could come take a look, and they, came out there and they did their own, sort of more detailed inventory of these bats.
When you saw this, I mean, there's that discovering King Tut's tomb sensation, that whole Indiana Jones sensibility. Did you know right away though? I mean, Steve sort of asked the question, but I mean that, wow, this is something big.
Well, it wasn't just the bats with this cave, right? This cave had huge passage. It has amazing gypsum formations. So right away, before we even saw the bats, we knew we had something amazing. And the bats are sort of, the icing on the cake in some ways with this discovery, right? So I think the bats took a little bit longer to sink in than sort of, they're smaller and not as visually. Don't bring you into focus as much as sort of the large passage and formation. So it probably took us, maybe more like a year to really let it sink in what could be going on and how informative these baths could be.
Before Robert and I started recording, he mentioned that he's a fan of bats, and then he clarified it and said, they eat mosquitoes and they do some great stuff. But it's also one of those things where, I mean, bats sort of, even people who are fans of Batman from age 6 to 90, the idea of a bat sort of creeps them out. Was there a feeling that, yes, okay, you wanted to make sure they're mammals, you want to make sure you're not going to catch anything, but was it just overall this fascinating experience to find this? Because I imagine in the 17 years since, you've seen some pretty fascinating things in caves, but probably wouldn't match this, right?
Yeah, that's correct. If you take a look at, the preservation of these bats, right, that we started to notice, that a lot of them are still, hanging off the walls, probably much like they died just in place right there, right? And you look at these things and they, you know, it's hard to tell that they're actually dead, right? That they're so well preserved and the features are, you know, are still all there from when they were alive. So it is pretty incredible once you kind of like, you know, start to take a closer look at these things and see what's going on.
You mentioned that you were in there, you know, documenting, you had a job to do. I'm curious, did you guys spend the night in the cave or did you guys climb back out?
For the Grand Canyon, we typically sleep on the surface. You know, the Grand Canyon is such a beautiful place to camp and hang out that, you know, unless we really need to, we don't camp in the caves in the Grand Canyon. We camp on the surface. So, you know, in like the 42 miles, but because it's sort of easy strolling passage in the cave, we can reach the furthest extents of the cave in just a few hours. So it's really no big deal to go in and out of the cave and camp on the surface. One of the other issues is that there's no water in the cave and all the water's on the surface. So we really need to go out every day and sort of, you know, refill our water and camp there on the surface.
You are at some point soon going to be heading back in. Can you tell us about that and what the process was, when the last time you were there and what you're hoping to find and how many more miles you're hoping to traverse on this next trip?
So we go to this area. The area where this particular cave is located at is on the north rim of the Grand Canyon, which is only accessible during certain times of the year. It's snowed in and a lot of the year and not accessible. So we always do, we just basically do a trip once a year in the fall, sort of one big week-long trip. And every year we're excited about some passage that we left the last time that we didn't, you know, get to walk down, but it looks interesting and we want to go back to. So that's what we're excited about again in the fall, is to go back and go down some of these passages that we've sort of just glanced down, but haven't actually explored them yet, and see what might be hidden beyond. And I think we're always hoping for the next big sort of breakout where we go down some passage and it just leads to miles and miles more of passage beyond that. So I think that's where the excitement's at for this next trip and whatever, you know, sort of secrets may be hidden, you know, within those passages that haven't been seen yet.
You mentioned that you're accessing it from the North Rim, which is a vast area, but you have kept this a guarded secret. And can you talk a little bit about what that was like? I mean, you know, you've sort of discovered this remarkable space and yet you can't, you know, go post it on Instagram.
Yeah, you know, that's always been a challenge, right? There's kind of this line between, you know, documentation and letting the public know about these things, but also being concerned that if the public goes there, right, that, and there's too much traffic through these things, that all the resources within would be destroyed, right? And yeah, I kind of follow the park's guidance on what they want to do as far as how much they want to let the public know about the caves and how much they don't. But you know, one thing is that these caves are really difficult to get to, so that helps protect them. But another thing is they, you know, these entrances are so large, it wouldn't be possible to gate them off, really. That would sort of be really a real challenge, really costly. So I think at some point, you know, secrecy may be sort of, you know, one of the only tools we have to sort of help protect these things.
That'd be a great question to close on. But let me throw one more in, because I'm really fascinated by the experience, the fact we go back to 07. And I think about over the course of 17 years, how my perspective has changed on a lot of things. If you want to talk about athletic ventures, my knees and my back hurt a lot more. How have you changed your approach from 07 to now as you know more, but maybe your body doesn't quite agree in the same way it always did?
Well, yeah, I think that's one thing where you try to take advantage of sort of the latest lightweight equipment, right? And you try to be smarter about what you're doing. I used to, when I was younger, for these things, we need to use ropes to access these caves. And when I was younger, I would carry around the biggest, thickest rope I could find. And now I try to find something thinner that weighs a lot less. And, you know, just the sort of little tweaks here and there to get your weight down and maybe just find, you know, simpler approaches to areas than I would have before and maybe not be so foolish. So a little bit of gear and technique, I'm hoping, is what I've improved as I've gotten older.
Jason Belensky is director of the Grand Canyon Cave Research Project. Jason, thanks for joining us on the Arizona Highways Podcast.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
So Robert, as we talked about, that story was really unique. you've done so many canyon stories over the years, but when this was first pitched to you by Kathy Montgomery, I mean, you've only been a magazine editor for 25, 30 years. So you've gotten some pitches, but when you first got this one, what did you think?
Well, it's a great question. You know, Kathy's been pitching me stories for many of those years that you mentioned. And I've always wanted to buy just about everything she's pitched to me. The only reason we wouldn't have is because maybe it had been done at some point. But so when I see a pitch come in from Kathy, I know it's going to have some great legs. And this one did. And to be honest, you know, we cover the canyon so much, you know, to see something different. But I, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, I see bats. And my first thought wasn't, is this going to be a good story? Because I knew it would be. My first thought is, how are we going to illustrate that? Because we are a visual magazine. And, you know, I talk about our reader sitting on his couch in Poughkeepsie. And, you know, what does he want to see or what does she want to see? And bats, which is, you know, I'm very fond of bats as a subject and a species, but, you know, they don't always represent well in a magazine. And as it turned out, you know, we were not given the permission to show anything from inside this cave. So we went ahead and used an illustrator.
It sure comes across as it's a fun approach. And it's also, like you say, you're not going to have anyone going, I don't want to look at this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we work with a lot of great illustrators. I didn't get to talk to this illustrator, but I'm sure that the fact that he had access to these images and seeing something, because this is really such a significant story. And Kathy mentions it in her piece that, you know, once this thing hits, they're going to be inundated with scientists from around the world who are going to come here, because what is existing in this cave, in our Grand Canyon, doesn't exist anywhere in the world that we know of. So, you know, for the illustrator to get a chance to showcase something must have felt pretty cool.
Well, and finally, when you and I talked about this in the past, you said, you know, obviously you've had great stories. We can't emphasize that enough over the years, but Arizona Highways usually doesn't break news.
No, I mean, that's for sure. I mean, when I read the story and it wasn't even going to be announced in any fashion until, you know, our story was already out. This might actually be the first time we've ever broken a big story. So, I'm very proud of that. And, I think it's pretty cool that a place like the Grand Canyon, which has so many stories and people know it for so many things, that, something like this comes along and makes people shake their heads and go, wow.
Yeah. Again, the story is To the Bat Cave by Kathy Montgomery. It's in the January 2024 issue of Arizona Highways. All right, that's all for this edition of the Arizona Highways podcast. For the editor of Arizona Highways, Robert Steve, I'm Steve Goldstein. Any final thoughts, Robert?
Thank you for taking on this project with us, Steve. It's great to have you on the team.
My pleasure. The music provided for this podcast by Epidemic Sound. Again, thanks for listening. You can find Arizona Highways podcast anywhere you find your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify. Hope you'll tune in. We hope you'll subscribe, rate, and review.